Welcome to the Kona Edge, where you'll discover what the best triathletes in the world do to give them the edge.
Welcome on to this edition of the Kona Edge. I'm Brad Brown. Awesome to have you with us. Thank you so much for joining us, and thanks for downloading and listening to the podcast. It is hugely, hugely appreciated. Hey, if you haven't checked out our Facebook group yet, there's some exciting things coming in that group very, very soon. So you need to be in it to find out more about it. It's just go to thekonaedge.com/Facebook. It's a free private Facebook group. Just go click on it. I'll add you. And yeah, keep a close eye on that group. We've got some very exciting developments coming in that. So it's thekonaedge.com/Facebook. Enough about me yakking today. Let's get straight into today's guest, and we head to Australia to catch up with a former Ironman age group world champion. And we'll find out more about his story today on the podcast. It's time to catch up with Richard Thompson. You're listening to the Kona Edge. Thank you for joining us, and we head to Australia now, and a beautiful part of the world. If you follow the Ironman circuit, you would have known that the 70.3 world champs moves around. The last one was held in a beautiful part of Australia, Sunshine Coast, and that's where we head to now, just north of Brisbane. It's a great pleasure to welcome Richard Thompson onto the podcast. Richard, welcome. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thanks, Brad. Really, really nice to be here.
It's a horrible place to live and train, isn't it? I'm saying that tongue in cheek.
Yeah, no, it's certainly a beautiful place in the world to train, and very spoiled, I think, almost year round. And that's why I think a lot of really good athletes are based here. And training is something you can't complain about. The weather, certainly, you can't complain about.
It is quite a hotbed for triathlon. You mentioned a lot of good athletes base themselves there. There's a very, very active scene.
Yeah, and it's great to see, and it always has been, I think. But yeah, and there's two sort of pockets. There's one sort of where I'm at, which is sort of south of the river around Mooloolaba. And then there's obviously a very big gathering up at Noosa, which is probably about half an hour away. And they're the likes of, you know, in the summertime, you know, you get the Andradino, the Bennetts, the McKenzies, they're all there. And they train, whether they train, I think Pete Jacobs lives up there as well. But and sometimes they train together and individually, but further south where we are at Mooloolaba, it's, you don't get as many celebrities, so to speak, but it's still a brilliant place to train for sure.
Absolutely. Richard, let's take a step back and sort of figure out and how your sort of journey came to where you are now. Where did your sort of exposure to triathlon, when did it start? How did you get involved in the sport?
Yeah, I was I grew up in Brisbane, about an hour south of where we're at now, and through school and certainly through secondary school, never really was into anything endurance. In fact, I was probably a little bit pudgy, to put it nicely, and I was the wicketkeeper and the goalkeeper, because that sort of involved the least amount of running. It was only in sort of uni days or college days that I sort of, the very first year out of school, that is, went on to study law, and I thought, oh, I need to lose some weight. Genuinely, that was the reason. And I thought, I've had enough of cricket and soccer, and I'll take up triathlon. I had a relative who was doing it as well. He was sort of in Ironman territory, but I thought, oh, I'll just do some sort of short stuff. So I did my first, it was sprint triathlons in 2001. It was just before I finished school. So, yeah. And it was terrible, to say the least.
I mean, I love that. I have to love that you went, instead of taking up running or cycling, it's like, you know, let's go and do all three. Do you think that's what it takes to be successful in a sport like triathlon? You have to go full on, that it's, you can't do things in half measure if you want to be successful?
Oh, I think so. And I think that's a lesson that you sort of need to come to at your own time. I mean, it took me a number of years of training to realize that I had any sort of talent in it, because it wasn't, I mean, the first triathlon I did, I was dead last in the age group. And I went in there with my sort of ambitious self, thinking that I'd get the top spot in the 16 to 19 age group, and I came dead last. but as a poor swimmer, because I went to swim squad, I think, for about 2 weeks when I was six, and I hated it. So mum pulled me out, which is, I never let her live that down. But yeah, I was a poor swimmer. So and the strength came from the bike, I suppose, a relative strength back then. And half Ironman certainly appealed to me because it wasn't much more swimming and certainly a lot more riding and running. So did my first half in 2003 and enjoyed that a lot more, I guess. And sort of that was the path that led towards thinking about doing an Ironman.
As a kid, you mentioned you were slightly overweight and always sort of play wicket keeper or that sort of thing. Were you competitive as a youngster? I mean, even though you were overweight, did you have that competitive streak in you?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I was very good at as best as you can be as a pudgy sort of.
You're a great wicket keeper.
I was one of the world's best, Brad. Overlooked too many times. No. But truthfully, yeah, definitely. It was always making the best team I could and improving, working on skills. And certainly looking back, I didn't sort of think that overall fitness would have improved my ability as a wicketkeeper or goalkeeper. I thought it was just skills, but certainly it would have helped had I run a bit more in both of those sports. But certainly loved those two sports, cricket and soccer. And and often these days I sort of think what would have happened had I kept trying at it. But it was, always competitive, always.
And if it wasn't for Adam Gilchrist, you would have been a shoo-in to start for Australia.
Definitely. Yeah, exactly. I was when Ian Healy retired and Gilly got the call up, it was devastating. But, but very happy, obviously very happy with, I think this is my 17th year in the sport thereabouts, and it's given me a lot. That's an understatement as to how much it's given back to me, and I wouldn't have changed it had I had another chance.
I find it interesting that you say that you did some swim squads when you were very, very young and hated it. What is the reason for not enjoying it? And you say you haven't let your mum live that down. It must be frustrating now, because it's exactly that. Swimming it's like riding a bicycle. If you can get that technique early on, you almost don't think, or you don't even have to think twice about it. But when you pick it up later in life, it becomes quite difficult.
Yeah, exactly. I don't necessarily know the reason. I think it was just on top of the cricket season or something, and I just thought, oh, it's a Friday night, and I just didn't really enjoy it. And I mean, I say that tongue in cheek about mum, because you know, when you're that young, you sort of should be just doing things that you enjoy. Really, you should be. Often on pool deck these days, you see some really competitive parents really making sure their kids swim a lot, and whether or not that's to their benefit is I suppose another question. But it certainly didn't take to it, let's put it that way. And I think I could always swim, don't get me wrong, but it weren't, you know, the idea of swimming 1500 meters was a long way, and certainly 3.8 when I first did mine, and that was something I had to get my head around.
Richard, tell me a little bit about the sort of when you started thinking, hey, I'm actually pretty good at this. Because, I mean, you can, as you said, you finished last in your age group in your first try. It's, I don't want to say it's difficult to come back from that, but like, when do you start believing that you've actually got some ability, and if you put some work in and focus a bit, you could actually be quite good at this?
Yeah, I suppose to answer that question, Brad, it sort of takes you to the first Ironman, I guess. I mean, the first half Ironman I did was on the Gold Coast, and it was the first time that I was sort of, obviously did the 90K, 21K off it, and I got fourth, I think, in the age group. Probably more of a reflection of the limited depth of that field on the day, but it certainly felt a lot better. It could have been out of five, I don't remember, but instead of thinking that it was second last, it was fourth, and it's certainly a lot better than coming, you know, doing a 255 Noosa triathlon and coming, you know, 58 in the age group or something that I did a few years two years before that race. So I just enjoyed it. I think that was the biggest thing for me, to do a race that I actually felt like I was I enjoyed being out there a bit longer than 2.5 hours for an Olympic distance. And and back then in 2005, you you had to qualify for Ironman Australia. You couldn't just enter, which is probably showing how long I've been in this sport. But so I qualified for Ironman Australia at Port Macquarie, and then just proceeded to do 12 months of training for the first Ironman. And it probably was maybe a year or two, certainly a year after that, that I realized that I had some talent. It was just a progression since 2001 when I started. I just never stopped training. You know, it was certainly never overtrained. I sort of obviously pushed the envelope, but it was just consistent without even realizing it. Consistent years, which sort of caught up to me for my benefit in 2007 and 2008.
And it's funny you say that, because I know you coach as well, and we'll chat a little bit about that too. But that is, unfortunately, there's no silver bullet or magic about the sport. You mentioned consistency, and if you want to be good at that at triathlon, that's the thing that probably separates the good from the great.
Yeah, 100%. I've chatted to a lot of athletes in my time, successful ones, professional ones as well, and you don't find too many good, really, really good results and consistent results without years backing you. So I think it's one thing to think this is my goal. I really, really want to qualify for Hawaii, or I want to play a podium, or I want to win. But that's almost putting the horse before the cart, the cart before the horse. And because the primary goal must be consistency. And it's funny, because it wasn't even on my mind in 2003 to 2005, even, or six, even, that I wanted necessarily to go to Hawaii, but it was just, I really enjoyed the sport and I was enjoying just training. And at the end of the day, it's a hobby, and it was a lot of people's hobbies. Some, you know, there's a fortunate or unfortunate number of people that do this for a job, but for a lot of us, it's for age groupers, it's a hobby, and you always need to fold that, you know, keep one eye on that, and it should be enjoyable. And if it's enjoyable, then consistency shouldn't be a problem.
Yeah, absolutely.
Obviously, illness and injury aside, but a lot of people get roped up in the seriousness of age group racing, but at the end of the day, the sport is beautiful because it more often than not rewards the consistency. And if you've done the work, the results will come. It may not come today, it may not come tomorrow, but it will absolutely come at some point.
Yeah, and you talk about that enjoyment, and it's funny because it's something that's popped up for the last few weeks here on the podcast, is that enjoyment and avoiding burnout. Because so often you see it, someone bursts onto the scene, they put in a year or two of solid performances, and then they disappear. And you mentioned you've been around the sport for a long time, you've been pretty lucky that you've remained injury-free and you've been able to train consistently. But that is a fine line, it's a difficult balance to get right, doing enough to be competitive, but not doing too much that you just get to a point where you go, stuff it, I hate the sport in 2 or 3 years' time.
Yeah. Absolutely. And I think the particular person or the particular athlete's view of their, you know, the raw goal, well, whatever that is, if it's, I think, certainly as a coach, I think that if their goal is materialistic, like a time or like a qualification or like a place, that becomes really stressful, because a lot of those are out of an athlete's control. What is in the athlete's control is consistency, is turning up, is doing all the things that they can do to keep themselves healthy. And I mean, obviously, you know, swimming and riding are less prone to injury, I guess. And running is the big one, and a lot of people struggle with putting together years of consistent running, because I guess, you know, the type A personality is to keep pushing that envelope and going, right, if I can handle 50 kilometers a week, I can handle 60 kilometers a week in the trail, I can handle 70, you know, and it keeps going until you get your pull up short, I guess. But I think the focus always needs, and that's natural, and that's probably a good thing to do that. But consistency, as I said, consistency is king, and how, which way you can do that is, you know, it will give you the results you're after at the end.
Absolutely. Richard, that first Ironman, the full distance, Port Macquarie, you mentioned having to qualify for it. Going into that race, did you go in there with specific goals, or was it a case of, you know what, I just want to survive this thing. I want to make sure I don't die and get through it in one piece?
Yeah.
Or did you go in there thinking, you know what, maybe if I'm quick enough, I could grab myself a Kona slot? What was the mindset going into it?
Absolutely, just finishing it, 100%. My family came down. Port's probably from Brisbane. It was about a 7-hour drive, and a lot of my family came down to watch. And I didn't know, but they had all pre-printed like Aloha, we're going to Hawaii banners.
No pressure.
No, but they didn't tell me. They had that in the suitcase and ready to pull out on the Monday after the race. But my Kona certainly was never in that expectation. Never in that wasn't in my mindset in 2006, and it was just to experience what the race had to offer. I couldn't even believe that I was even doing something like that. You know, I was only four years ago, I was keeping wickets and a little bit overweight. So it certainly was, it was surreal to be there and doing it. And it was certainly the emotional, you know, it's something very special about your first Ironman, and something that you'd never forget. But on a result level, I did 9:44, and it was good enough for fifth in the 18-24 age group. I was 21, and there were two spots at that time. I think in 2007, that was the only Ironman in Australia, and there were two spots to the age, and it rolled to fourth. So I missed out by one spot. And the guy that beat me by about, I think he beat me by about 2 minutes or something. So I had to go back from the roll down ceremony, and not that I wasn't disappointed. I was, because I knew that I got fifth and there were two spots, and that was fine. And I didn't realize that something could roll down as low as five. And I saw the guy who was fourth who accepted it, and we're still mates now. And he had a good race in Hawaii that year, but certainly I didn't invite the relatives to the next race.
how much of a fire did that light under you, though, coming so close but not picking up
actually,
that spot?
It wasn't as much as I thought. I stayed in the sport, and again the following year went back to Port. I went back to the Ironman Australia. I changed coaches. I was self-coached for a little while, and I was doing quite well in the age group for the half Ironman after that, the next season, based on basically 12 months of Ironman training. And again, more of a reflection of the lack of depth in the 18-24 age group, I'm sure. And then I was getting the podiums or winning these age group races in the half Ironman series or 70.3 series in Australia, but for the age group, but I wasn't improving in my times in training or in racing really. And so I moved coaches. I got another coach, but I was obviously self-coached at the time. So I got this coach, and we went to Port again. I suppose Kona wasn't necessarily the goal either. It was just more about being a better athlete, more of a complete performance. And then in 2007, did 9:30. So it was a 15-minute improvement. Got third. Probably the most two athletes that beat me are probably the most, I reckon, the most underrated athletes of all time in Australia, but they just never went professional. But they both took their spots to Hawaii. So I missed out again by a spot, and that put the fire beneath me for sure.
Absolutely. I mean, that's got to hurt. I mean, coming so close once, but twice is definitely going to provide some motivation. Before we get on to that, the next time around when you did qualify, talk to me about that first one. We've got a lot of sort of athletes who listen to the Kona Edge who are just starting out in their journey and are trying to wrap their head around doing a full distance Ironman race. What, can you remember the mindset going in, not quite sure if you can go that far? Because it's a big step up, and as much as we do the training, there's always that doubt, that seed of doubt in our minds that think, you know, maybe I can't do it.
Yeah, I think that's normal. I think looking back at it on my first one especially, you can't, even any Ironman now, subsequent, you can't be treading water at the start and think about the day ahead. It's far too big. And even in training, you can't think, you can't think it's a 10-hour, 11-hour, 15-hour day. You just have to concentrate on, you know, your own square meter around you and what you're doing right now. And if you can swim, you can swim 100 meters. So let's just swim the 100 meters. Let's keep swimming. Let's keep swimming. That's all right. That's 3.8 done. Get out, hopping on the bike. This is obviously for race day, but staying in the moment is so important, whether it be your first or last Ironman. I mean, it's as soon as you think about the you know, you really shouldn't think about the entire race as a whole until finish, you know, the finishing shoot. And that's where it becomes a fairly emotional area. But as soon as you think about, you know, how long that day is or what you've got ahead of you, it's not good for you. It's not good for your head at all. So I would suggest that you keep it in perspective. You keep it, you just deal with the minute that you have, you know, at this time, and just tick away. And the human body is an amazing thing. And you've done the work and you've had that consistency, then, and you have the right mindset, then it'll be for the first timers, it's a brilliant experience. It really is.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's talk about that finally qualifying and the build up to that. What did you do differently going back and reassessing what happened in that second race where you probably went in with higher expectations than the first one, and then going back and going, okay, let's do the post-mortem on this thing. What went right? What went wrong? What do we change? What did you change? What did you think you would doing right? What did you think you were doing wrong in the build up to when you finally qualified?
Yeah, I think in the second Ironman Australia, I was handsomely beaten by those two guys. There was, I think the Tim that won, he did sub 9. He got top 10 overall, and Benny Orr got, I think, 9:10. So I was 20 minutes behind them, behind second and 30 minutes behind first. So we went back and thought, right, the result verified that I really wanted to get to Hawaii. And that was the first time that I really had that feeling. And then secondly, it was certainly like, well, to have the chance to qualify, I don't want to roll down. I want to ensure that I, you know, guarantee that spot. And a lot of work needs to get done. So to answer your question, I was at uni at the time, up until that point, studying full time. So I moved to part-time. pardon me. It was the overall training load was much more, I think, looking back. I've got every session I've ever done handwritten down in diaries, but the overall volume of the work increased. I think we added in, on a specific level, we added in a second long ride midweek, which I don't think I've ever left. Since then, we had a training camp down in Victoria for 2 weeks, and my running improved, but I think that was just really good timing in terms of not significant improvement, but just overall improved the endurance level of it all. Then we decided to go to Ironman Western Australia at Busselton that year, so only about 7 or 8 months between Ironman Australia and the December Ironman in Busselton, which was only, I think, 3 or 4 years old. But my coach, who was racing as well, we joked that we'd go close to sub 9, and that was at the time, I remember, that was certainly a tongue-in-cheek suggestion, because there was back then. I mean, Busselton's a fast course relative to Port Macquarie, but the sub 9, the sub 9 group of athletes and age group was far less than what it is these days, certainly.
Then talk to me a little bit about the age group, and I want to bring in, because you've been to Kona a couple of times. You qualified then in at that race 2008. You went to the big, or it was, I'm guessing, Busselton was December, so it was the following year you went to the Big Island. And then there's been a fairly big gap. I think it's 8 years, if my math serves me correct, from your first to second visit to the Big Island. And you mentioned the strength in that 18 to 24 age group. Obviously, age grouping up, and the older you get to that 35, 40, 40 to 45, it gets extremely competitive in there. Big gap, that must take some doing to almost have a gap like that and then go and re-qualify. It's almost like you're doing it again from scratch.
Yeah, I guess I'm in WA, went very well. I was able to win that and go sub nine, qualified for Hawaii. Hawaii went very, very well on debut. I was able to win the age group then. And then I turned professional straight away at 23 and did 3 years of professional racing and threw everything at it as I could. And I was at the same time as finally graduating and becoming a lawyer and having an up and down season. That last one, a few 70.3 podiums, but my heart was in Ironman and I wasn't getting the Ironman results or at least vindication of what I was doing in training, showing in a race. It was in the 2011 that I thought, all right, I'm certainly done as a professional and I thought done as an age grouper. So I sold everything, but I think I kept my running shoes and always kept running, but had 3 years hiatus of absolutely not a swim, not a stroke in the pool and not a pedal pushed. And then it was 2014, a friend of mine got us over into Hawaii to watch him race an age grouper. He did very well that day and it sort of irked me a little bit and had to sit down with my wife, who thought the triathlon was an old chapter, and we thought, right, let's try for Hawaii 2016. That was back in 2014.
She thought you were making a comeback as a podgy wicketkeeper.
yeah. Well, actually, funnily enough, she's very supportive of that. I think the hours of Ironman training are far greater than what a pudgy wicketkeeper could do these days.
Well, I'll talk about that comeback to Kona in 2016, but talk to me about the balance and the family life balance, because that's another thing a lot of age groupers really do struggle with is having and I use air quotes for normal, because I think as a triathlete, particularly if you're a very competitive one, there is no such thing as normal. But having that balance, family balance, right, and work balance, and getting that sort of the way it should be, and then also putting in enough time that you can be competitive. How do you deal with that? What are some of the strategies and some of the things you do to get that balance right?
Yeah, so my wife was my girlfriend back in 2008, and so in 2007, and so she understood what it took and obviously throughout my professional stint. So when I said to her, I'm wanting to qualify and get back, have to start swimming again, she knew what that meant. The difference was that we have a boy, a son, as well as her working, almost full time. And I was a full time lawyer. So, and she runs, and she does ultra running for her own sanity. So it was a very different, sort of circumstances that presented to us. I think for anyone juggling that with priorities, you've got to understand first where those priorities lie first and foremost. So family for us was always first. And if that ever, you had to be very sensitive to working out if that was getting jeopardized. You couldn't just be, all right, we'll train for 4 weeks and put our head up. Always be really mindful of that. Then obviously then work, you know, you've got to be able to do your work. Otherwise, the bills don't get paid. So that's second, and then training's third, and where how that looks on a weekly schedule comes back to that consistency. And if that allows you 10 hours a week to have, you know, a really happy environment at home and at work, and you can smash 10 hours a week of training, then I think you're far better as a longevity. You're far better to do that than to try to get 18 hours and your home life goes south and work gets the shits and then it all crumbles and you start resenting the sport and it doesn't work. So we certainly, I mean, on a practical level, it meant 3 a.m. push-ups on the bike and certainly getting the sleep, you know, getting that sort of sleep that was probably the hours of sleep reduced to allow that sort of Ironman training to get done. But I think as long as everyone's on board and supportive, and you just keep everyone, you treat everyone with a lot of respect, and you know, you come back to that whole idea that it's a hobby and it's not, you're not playing for sheep stations, or you're not trying to make a living out of it. So if you miss a session because, you know, your family would rather you home on a Saturday morning for one particular morning or whatever, or you have to stay back at work because there's a project due, then that's fine. It's a hobby. So I think a lot of people generally need to sit, you know, treat it as such, not as serious as maybe some do.
Absolutely. Richard, that coming back after a bit of hiatus and making the decision that you wanted to qualify again, was it hard a second time round to qualify, or did the experience of having done it before help you out and you feel it was easier second time round?
Yeah, I must admit, I didn't. I mean, I went to Busselton again to qualify, because I do like the idea of qualifying very early in the season. I mean, there's a lot of Ironmans now to choose from in Australia and New Zealand, but I do like the idea of getting that sort of qualification done. And so getting back to training, qualifying, I didn't think it was going to be a problem. And I was very lucky that I got fourth in the age group in Busselton, and there was four spots. So I was very fortunate that that I was able to qualify there and without an issue. You know, it certainly wasn't it was a less than perfect day, as I guess most Ironmans are. But training wise, I kept running, as I said, did a few ultra runs in between that 3-year gap. So my running never, I mean, it dropped because as trail running, you sort of get a bit slower. But my joints and my bones and my tendons, that weren't a problem. So when I wanted to run sort of 60 or 70 K a week, I didn't have any injury issues. Riding, on the other hand, that was a really hard slog to get back into shape, and swimming was unfathomable. Like it took certainly almost 18 months, I think, to get back to where I was comfortably swimming, or happily swimming the times that I thought I was capable of. So I wouldn't, if I was to do it again, if I was to take some time off, I would stay in the pool 100%.
Looking at the Big Island itself and that race, if I say the word Kona, what do you think?
Yeah, it's a magical place. I mean, I think it's a place that is very, I mean, it holds a lot deep, you know, it's in the heart of a lot of Ironman athletes, and it certainly is a special place for us. And I didn't want to go back there after 2008, having such an amazing experience there. I didn't want to even go back to holiday. Like we've been to Hawaii, holiday at different islands, but never went back to Hawaii, the Big Island. And it was only in 2014, as I said, and that sort of drew me back. But I could, if the visas allowed, I'd live there. I mean, it's an awesome place, and full of, you know, I get caught up with the whole, you know, the island gods and all of that. I think it's brilliant, and I think it's present, and it's just the whole town is it's awesome. Yeah.
I mentioned we've got a lot of newbie triathletes who listen to the podcast, but we've also got a lot of hopefuls, Kona sort of, who've got major Kona aspirations. If you had to sum it up, what does it take to get to Kona? If somebody sat you down and said, Richard, I want to go, what do I need to do? What would you tell them?
Yeah, I think the first point is, you know, you need to have a good team around you, first and foremost, that allows consistency to occur. So you need to have the appropriate environment, from home life to work life to everything, so that, you know, your life is consistent. That is a huge importance, I think, that if you've got a really, there's obviously a lot of people out there who their work is variable, or their stress levels are variable with work, or cyclical, or, you know, it's not super consistent at home. Not impossible hurdles to jump over, but certainly a hindrance. You need a really consistent life, I think, to be able to handle the improvements you need.
on a mental level, I think also I touched on before, realizing that qualification is out of your control. So you could go into an Ironman and have the most amazing race of your life and still miss out on Hawaii qualification because X number of people just better than you turned up. And that's, you sort of have to shrug your shoulders and say, well, I did a great race. That's all I can do. It's the only thing in my control. So as soon as you start putting pressure on yourself to go, I'm here to qualify, then it becomes really hard because that's all you're thinking about. Whereas if you're just thinking about, I'm just getting the most out of myself on any given day, then on today, on this race day, then that's the focus. And if you get a qualification spot, then that's brilliant. If you don't, then there's always another time to do it. And then finally, I think, certainly training, consistency, which is what we talked about. But, you need to understand your why. And I'm a huge believer in that because and you need to go deep. Not just, I just want to qualify. I'm doing this race because the reason why is I want to go to Hawaii. But there's a deeper sort of more subconscious level of reasoning as to why you're out here for 15, 20, 25, 30 hours a week and why you're choosing to ride 180Ks on any given Saturday and not spending it with your family. And if you can dig deep enough, and it might be because you want to show your family what you can do, or you want, personally, you want to see how fast you can go, as a pudgy wicketkeeper. But but you need to, I think it's so key because when times get really hard in training or otherwise, if you're not getting the gains that you're after, or otherwise, you can fall back on that why, and it's always there for you. Especially in a race when if things aren't going to plan or it's getting really difficult, having a really clear why as to is crucial.
And then just finally, what's the biggest lesson that you've learned from the sport? What is Ironman, biggest life lesson Ironman's taught you?
If you get out, what you put in. I know that's quite a cliche, but it can be applied in life as well. And the better person that you are, the general person, and the more you give back, the more that you'll invariably receive. And with training, the more you give, and not expect as much, the more it will come back to you. So it's, as I said, it's been a long time since my first triathlon and certainly a long time since my first Ironman, 10 years since my first Ironman, in fact. I think if you can focus on it's such a selfish sport. I mean, you have a team around you and they like to see you succeed and do your best, but when it comes down to it, it's a lot of time by yourself. And but if you can help others and repay that selfishness, then I think you'll go a long way in the sport and certainly in life.
Richard, and then just sort of you've done lots. I mean, you've raced on the Big Island twice. You've won your age group there. You've also turned pro and come back to the age group ramps. Now, what's still left to achieve in the sport for you? What keeps you going?
Yeah. Well, 2006, the last year, 2016, that was the push to see how fast I could go, the sort of 31-year-olds and thinking that, that endurance improves like a bottle of wine. And, I thought I'd be this, amazing athlete, much better than I was when I was 22 or 23, which proved more difficult than applying that in on race day proved more difficult than I thought. But that comes down to this year, I guess, because my wife's doing UTMB in France as an ultra race in August. Kona won't be on the agenda, but I'm excited to be having been accepted into Ultraman Australia in May. So a 3-day stage triathlon, I guess, of sorts, and doing something a little bit different this year. And it's exciting. It makes me feel like and back in Port Macquarie in preparing for Port Macquarie in 2006, doing something that I have no idea how I'm going to go.
You're also coaching a bit as well, just to wrap up. If you want to find out more about your coaching and what you do and your philosophies, where can they get more info from?
Yeah, I'm one of the coaches at T0 Multisport. That's just T-Z-E-R-O multisport.com.au. Australian-based sort of coaching company. We do a lot of correspondence programs or training. Main philosophy really is that, is essentially completely customized approach of training. And I mean, I know that sort of said a lot, but we have athlete caps so that our coaches don't take on, you know, open the floodgates and let anyone in, or any, you know, as more athletes, the better, because it just doesn't the quality of the coaching and the direction of what we do is sort of becomes jeopardized then. So we focus on half Ironman and Ironman triathletes predominantly. That's what we do. We stay clear of this sort of short stuff. And we sort of think that if someone has an epic goal of trying to qualify or trying to win Hawaii, or even just trying to beat a certain time, sub 12 hours, let's say, and sub 14 hours, we're certain, or just want to do their first Ironman. That's what we're all about. And it's my experience is certainly bringing in that whole aspect of understanding your life and understanding things outside of your sport, outside of the sport, so that the coach can get a far greater understanding of how your life operates, so that they can then, from that platform, as well as obviously your training history and your strengths and weaknesses, but then allows you to program that session or program that block or build or, you know, season upon season much better, knowing exactly what's going on, as against just following out a standardized program. So it's a good, really good bunch of coaches and a great bunch of athletes, and everyone's sort of living their potential. It's brilliant to see.
Awesome. Well, Richard, what I'm going to do is I'm going to pop that link into the show notes. If people want to check it out or check you out, they're more than willing to do that. And all they have to do is head over to theconeedge.com and check out the show notes for this episode. Richard, look forward to getting you on next time out to talk a little bit about your swim, to find out some of the things you've done over the years to get better. But we'll save that for another day. Thanks for your time today.
Thanks so much, Brad.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Kona Edge. Don't forget to connect with us on social media. Simply search for the Kona Edge.